The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Alex, welcome to the show once again, mate.
Thanks, man.
Well, it's quite interesting because you just had a motorcycle accident, did you, this week? And there's the motorcycle.
I did. There it is. It's haunting me, mate.
How you doing?
I'm okay. Like my face is still pretty, so I saved that. And but I destroyed my leg pretty well. My foot looks like, one foot looks like it's come from an Oompa Loompa, and the other foot still looks normal. So for whatever that's worth, I don't know. But hey, that's what you get when you ride down hills.
On a spiritual level, what did it tell you?
On a spiritual level, it told me that for every action, there's a reaction, which is ride down a dirt hill in the nighttime. Action, reaction, eat dust.
This is our sixth journey today, and there's, I'd love to be able to go through some of these, the language that is used in the cryptocurrency world. I know it might be a little bit basic for you and probably tedious, but for a lot of people, there's some words out there and some acronyms that we should talk about. And
yeah, sure.
Where do you want to start? Where do you think is a really good place to start with this?
Well, maybe an interesting one that's come up recently is all this talk about, you know, Bitcoin's going to burn all the energy in the world and we're all going to die. And, you know, so it's like we in the industry, we call it energy FUD. And FUD stands for like fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? And it's sort of like, you know, it's how we've acronymed, you know, when stupid people come up with stupid arguments about things that they don't understand. And I mean, I guess we can talk about a little bit the energy stuff. And I was actually on a podcast with Chris Judd the other week, and, you know, he brought up the energy problem, and he's like, look, you know, there's people saying that Bitcoin's going to, you know, destroy the world because at the rate it's going, you know, it's going to chew up all the electricity. And it's funny, like, there's four things I'll say to this. You know, number one is Bitcoin's hash rate has nothing to do with the amount of transactional throughput that happens in the network. Like, they literally have nothing to do with each other. You know, that the hash rate is network security. It's how much work goes into securing the network. And work is the only thing in the universe that you can't fake, right? So like what mining is, and mining is another one of these buzz terms, is the process that a validator on the network performs in order to basically achieve consensus with all the other validators. And that process requires that they play a game called proof of work. And in this game, basically, they expend electricity trying to find a magic number, which is extraordinarily difficult to find. And in doing so, the first validator, the first miner to find this number, they get the right to lock that block of transactions to the one behind it. Now, if they lock that block with a set of transactions that the rest of the network doesn't have, for example, so if they sort of slide a couple of transactions in there for themselves, like to double spend some Bitcoin, what happens is the chances of that same miner winning, that same validator winning that proof of work game again, is basically second to none, because they would need more, probabilistically speaking, they would need to input more energy than all of the rest of the network combined in order to win that game. So then what happens is the next block doesn't recognize those few transactions. So the previous one would become an obsolete block. So that miner who did the dodgy thing, basically, would have expended all this electricity, all of this money, for zero reward. So what happens is that the incentive mechanism of the network to achieve consensus, and this was the breakthrough that Satoshi Nakamoto put forward, is this idea that when you and I transact from bank account to bank account, we're trusting two validators, your bank and my bank, to basically, you know, change the ledgers internally. On Bitcoin, you've got tens of thousands of validators all around the world who don't know each other. And how do they achieve agreement? Well, they do it with this game, which is you expend electricity on the front end, and one miner, one validator wins the block. And that creates this sort of convergent consensus, which is agreement every 10 minutes. And it's agreement on, you know, the benefit of doing the right thing, which is not trying to put double spend transactions in, outweighs the benefit of doing the wrong thing. Because probabilistically speaking, like mathematically, it's the one thing you can't sort of cheat, is you can't just, you know, like, unless you're the only miner who has all the fucking network power, like you can't win that race again and again and again. It doesn't work. So anyway, Bitcoin is like, I guess the way, going off on a major tangent here, but you know, with mining, it's a way for us to have an open monetary network that is backed by work. And everything else in the universe is backed by work. Like, you know, if you want to know what proof of work looks like, look at your house. You know, you have proof of work in your house, which is someone had to build the damn thing, you know, like your career, there's proof of work. So proof of work as an idea, it permeates everything in the universe. It permeates all of life, all of existence. Anything that you want to do involves the use of energy and the consumption of energy. You know, it's a ledger. And what Bitcoin has done, it's taken real world work and used it as a bridge to give us something in the digital space that now is fixed in supply, you know, and has all the attributes that Bitcoin has, right? So it actually, it's kind of like a direct bridge between the virtual and the physical world. And it does that through this mining process, because it's, you know, there's, I'm trying not to get too esoteric here, but maybe we'll stop here to see if there's a question or if there's anything you want to, any thread you want to pull on there.
All right. Just so anybody's watching, we're going to audio only because Alex is in Costa Rica and the Wi-Fi is in and out a little bit. So you talked about FUD. Okay.
What else is there?
Okay, there's heaps. There's like HODL, which is one of the most famous ones, right? So it's like, it started like...
HODL is...
H-O-D-L. Yeah, so it became a meme, basically. It's I think it was back in 2011 or whatever, you know, when Bitcoin sort of crashed from $13 to $1 or something like that. There was some nerd on the computer on one of the Bitcoin forums, was apparently drunk and trying to write like, hold on for dear life, but he wrote HODL instead. And then it kind of just randomly became a meme that stands for hold on for dear life, you know, H-O-D-L. and that's sort of just become like the Bitcoiner's meme, which is you don't sell Bitcoin, you HODL it. And it's an interesting thing.
To the moon.
To the moon, yeah. That's this idea of like, you know, we're going into the stratosphere, like we're going up and to the moon. So that's kind of like a, you know, we're on a rocket ship basically. And you know, Bitcoin is a financial rocket ship in that sense. So that's that one.
You list them off, because you speak this language better than I do.
Cool. So there's that. There's damn, now you got me on the spot. What's another one? Bitcoiners have a really funny one these days. It sort of emerged last year. It's HFSP, and it's have fun staying poor. So basically, what happens is, you know, people come and, you know, say some FUD about Bitcoin, right? So they're like, oh yeah, Bitcoin uses too much energy, or whatever. And you know, we sort of attempt in the beginning to kind of educate people, but if you know, you've got some people who are completely ignorant and just not willing to learn. And then, you know, the answer is, okay, cool. Have fun staying poor. You know, it's like, then buy Bitcoin then. It's like, you know, I don't have to beg you to, you know, for your own salvation. If you don't want it, fuck off. You know, have fun staying poor. So that's one of my favorite ones, actually, because it reminds me of like the Jordan Peterson talks about this a lot. It's like, you don't cast pearls before swine. And, you know, to a large degree, as much as you try and help some people, they genuinely either can't be helped, don't want to be helped, or too ignorant or arrogant to be helped. So I think it's one of the best memes out of all of them. What else? There's another good one, which is NGU technology. And, you know, that started off as a meme because everyone sort of in 2017 that was creating their own bullshit shitcoin crypto, we're always talking about, you know, these stupid ideas of technology, like, oh, you know, our thing does, you know, AI, big data, blockchain technology in our new currency. I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, no, it was just so many buzzwords flying around. So, you know, the Bitcoin community turned around and said, all right, we've got NGU technology. And, you know, a bunch of people thought we were talking about some new, you know, cryptographic tech that was going in the network, but what it actually means is number go up, which is, you know, the price of Bitcoin rises and that technology uses. So Bitcoin is kind of, we take, you know, the FUD that's thrown at us and we turn it into a joke. You know, like there's a whole community of Bitcoiners called the toxic Bitcoiners. And you know, basically all these Ethereum and like all these like bloody socialist morons that rolled their own coins, they, you know, because Bitcoiners have been calling them out from the beginning, they're like, oh, you guys are toxic, you know, and all this shit. So we kind of done that on us, and you know, we're sort of like the toxic Bitcoiners, and we just go around blasting everyone. You know, and then probably one of the latest ones, which has been really interesting, is the laser ray to 100K. So every Bitcoiner on Twitter has put laser eyes on their avatar, on their profile, and sort of holding that there to 100K. And it actually swept the whole globe, man. The Libertarian Party in Amsterdam put it on their so basically, you know, on their posters out in the city. Cynthia Lummis, who's a senator in America, and she's a full-on Bitcoiner. She put it on her fucking profile. You know, Michael Saylor, everyone did. I think even Elon Musk did bloody laser eyes for a day. So it's like, I don't know, Bitcoiners are like the meme masters, and we just take sort of the craziness that's happening in the world, and we transform it into something that is digestible. One other one I'll mention is the Bitcoin fixes this. So that's something, you know, a lot of us put as a hashtag is, you know, when people will sit there, talk about like, oh, you know, the energy crisis, oh, this, oh, this. It's like, well, you know, we just tag it with Bitcoin fixes this, because Bitcoin actually does. The you know, you fix the money, and the flow-on effect you get downstream for that actually starts to realign all of the other problems that we're seeing today, which are a result of the perverted economic systems and the incentives associated with the perverted economic system. So as trite as it might sound, Bitcoin fixes this is actually fucking true. You know, whether it's poverty, whether it's, you know, the bullshit that we're doing in some cases on the environment, like, although 90% of that is overblown, but, you know, there is some things where we are genuinely damaging the environment, like monocrop cultures and GMOs and, you know, the garbage that we're dumping in the fucking oceans, like all of that stuff is a result of really draconian, stupid economic policies, which don't believe that there is a cost to doing that stuff. So they print money on one side, they fund moronic ideas, and they destroy the planet along the way. Like, you know, the mask mandate actually is a perfect example. Like, I think something like 30 billion masks being produced every week or something like that, like disposable. I mean, what the fuck kind of insanity is this? And that's a result, like, that's destroying the environment. And what's that a result of? It's the result of government mandates, and government mandates are a result of their capacity to run a bankrupt organization that doesn't give a fuck about their constituents. And they can only do that because they can print money, they can tax us, and they can borrow from the future, which basically is a, you know, is backed by taxing us and inflating our money. So it's like, it all comes back to that.
Let me ask you a question. Like, I saw a report the other day, or a news article, which is also another token, Audius or Audio, which is, I think it's a decentralized music streaming protocol that seeks, I'm just reading it here, seeks to give everyone the freedom to distribute, monetize, and stream any audio content, where they're giving it to the musicians. So instead of them working through their record company, I think it is, they can put something out on this network. How does that work in relation to, like, a cryptocurrency? Are there, I guess what I'm asking is there benefits to other cryptocurrency networks out there, or options out there in the future? Maybe they haven't done it in the past, like what you're talking about, but are there any good things popping up that you're seeing?
Not at all. None of that. Like, this one, for example, reminds me of one. You know, there was a million of them in 2017, like promising a decentralized network to, you know, allow people to upload their stuff wherever they want to. Well, the problem, the reason that doesn't work is, and this is the thing, is like, people are trying to take the Bitcoin recipe, which is a recipe for creating a decentralized monetary network. And the benefit of that decentralized monetary network is a money that you can't fuck with, and a network upon which that money can flow that is uncensorable. Now, that's expensive. You know, that requires you incentivize the nodes to run, to do proof of work, right? So that whole game that I mentioned before, that expensive electricity, there is an actual incentive to run nodes. Now, the problem with all these other things is there's no incentive to run nodes. Like, what's the incentive for somebody to run one of these nodes and put up storage space for somebody to store something on there? Like, there's no incentive. So what generally happens, these guys basically say all this bullshit about, oh, yeah, we're going to decentralize the network. But to begin with, we're going to launch a token, and that token is going to fund our way into decentralization. So they make up this bullshit story. They launch this token. They bring on a bunch of money on the front end. So people pay for this promise of this future decentralized network. And all that happens is they get the guys who launch the token up on the front end, they get all the money. Some of them just run away with the money, but some of them, they say, all right, we're going to now, like, bootstrap this network. So they go and they start running servers all around the world. And this is what the idiots at Ethereum did. So the only people running Ethereum nodes is the Ethereum network. And apparently there's only four nodes in the entire world. Like, there's only four full nodes in the entire world in the Ethereum network. So it's not decentralized. So basically you've just got an AWS, but instead of Jeff Bezos running it, you have Vitalik Buterin running it. So that's the same with all of these other things, is that they try and bootstrap it themselves. There's no economic incentive for anybody else in the world to run one of these fucking nodes. So, you know, we jump from the fry pan into the fire. And what happens over time is people realize that, oh, fuck, no one's using this thing. So then the token becomes worthless. And, you know, a bunch of people made a bunch of money. A bunch of people lost a bunch of money. And we've just got time, energy, and all this shit wasted. Like, it's totally, absolutely, categorically not a solution to anything. It's, you know, Bitcoin's incentive model works because there is a clear, direct, simple incentive to run a Bitcoin validator or a Bitcoin node, and it's a straight up monetary incentive.
Okay,
like it's so simple.
Let's explain node again, just because you mentioned it a few times. Then again,
perfect. Yes. So there's two types of nodes. There is a validator, a mining node, and that's the one that does the proof of work, right? So that's the one that takes energy and is the one that signs the block, right? So it puts the group of transactions into a block and ties it to the previous block. So that's a miner. You also have a second type of node, and this is the one that nobody ever talks about, but it's just as important. It's kind of, the word's not validator. It's kind of like it is sort of like a meta layer of node operators. And a node just means if you think about human beings, we are all nodes on the internet, right? Because a node is just a point in which information passes, okay? So on the Bitcoin network, you've got these, you know, validator nodes, but then you've got these full nodes, we call them, which keep just a copy of the entire blockchain on them, number one, of the entire Bitcoin blockchain, and they run the latest version of the Bitcoin software, right? So each node basically, you know, has the option to just, you know, operate, run, and upgrade to the latest version of the software. Now, a lot of people run their own nodes because they want to be their own bank. In other words, they want absolute privacy for their wallet. They don't want to connect to public nodes in order to check their, you know, Bitcoin addresses, their wallet balances, and all that sort of stuff. Others run multiple nodes because, you know, they want to sort of add decentralization to the network and all of this. But effectively, in the Bitcoin world, those second layer nodes, they don't actually have a direct economic incentive to they're not mining. They're not like the mining nodes where, you know, they input electricity, input proof of work in order to win that magic number. These second layer nodes are done more for decentralization of the system, for privacy, for sovereignty over the Bitcoin. And they're a way for you to know without a shadow of a doubt that the version of Bitcoin you're running, the wallet you're running, and all of that is 100% like accurate, yours. You have a whole copy of the entire Bitcoin ledger from the beginning of time. You know, it's all there. So there's no, like, it was originally designed like that. Bitcoin was originally designed like that so that you can be your own bank. Now, as all these other shitcoin protocols, and like this is what happened with Bitcoin Cash in 2017, was they wanted to increase what's called the block size, and as a way to increase the transactional throughput of Bitcoin on the base layer. Now, in doing that, the miners themselves wouldn't really be affected too much. I mean, to some degree they would, because they would have to carry more data per block. And when you think about more data per block, it means that the storage capacity of every validator needs to increase. But the problem would have been at the second layer node level, those guys would have to buy continually more expensive storage devices in order to store the entire blockchain. Now, this is really bad, because what you create is, instead of an incentive to run a node, you actually create a disincentive, and straight up economic disincentive. And this is what the Bitcoin community argued about when, you know, people like Roger Ver and shit like that popped up and said, oh, Bcash is the way to go because this, you know, we're going to get more transactional throughput. Everyone's like, no. We do not need transactional throughput on the base layer. We need maximum security on the base layer. We need to keep the block size small. We need to keep the whole blockchain super efficient, so that anybody anywhere can set up and run a node really quickly, really simply, and that decentralized, keeps the network decentralized. And what it does is it keeps the miners honest and it keeps everybody else on the network honest, because you can't just go and turn around and be the person with the most miners and change the network. And that's what every other network suffers from. That nobody else is running full nodes on any other network because there's no incentive, A, to do it. B, there's a huge disincentive to do it because the blockchains are so bloated with fucking data that is useless, like whether it's Ethereum, whether it's, you know, these other guys that want to do videos or audio or whatever on their own blockchains. They basically destroy any incentive mechanism for anybody to go out there and run something. Whereas a Bitcoin node, it's $100. You set it up, you run it, you can run it on a little Raspberry Pi at home. And, you know you've got your own Bitcoin node, you've got maximum privacy, your money, it's your money, nobody knows anything, and you've got full control of it. So there is a strong incentive at $100 for you to do that if you want to, and more and more and more people around the world are doing that. And I guess it's such an area of like misinterpretation. And unfortunately, people sort of get sucked into these ideas of trying to replicate the Bitcoin model, but not understanding the trade-offs that are done in Bitcoin to enable it to be decentralized and censorship resistant. So they think they can take bits of the puzzle. It's kind of like trying to bake a cake, but only doing it with the eggs and the water. And you didn't make a cake, you made scrambled eggs and you're trying to sell it off as a cake. It doesn't work.
Can you let us know how many nodes are operating around the world globally?
This is the beauty of Bitcoin. Nobody actually knows, because you can either put your IP address on your node on so that other nodes can find you, or you can keep it off and it's basically nobody knows that node's there. So what we think is that there's maybe 50,000 nodes or something, or 100,000 nodes. There could be way more. And that's the beauty of Bitcoin, is it like enables financial privacy.
And if, for instance, let's just so people understand, and I have a, let's just say there were 10 nodes just for this example.
Mm-hmm.
If 9 of them got taken out and there was still one, that means Bitcoin will still function.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But if all got taken out, which is nearly impossible unless we have a world disaster or EMF or whatever, or EMP, however.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's what makes Bitcoin so robust. It's literally now, and this is why Bitcoiners have been so vehement about, maintaining small blocks, about, not about abstracting transactional throughput to second layers and third layers and all this sort of stuff. We've been vehement about this because everyone who understands Bitcoin wants to ensure that it is as robust as possible. And at this point, it's literally impossible to shut down Bitcoin. There is no way to shut down Bitcoin, barring a fucking asteroid hitting us and wiping out all of humanity. And even then, Bitcoin may probably survive because there's satellites floating out that are now running nodes out in the atmosphere. So it's like Bitcoin will probably outlive us. So it's just super, 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 super robust. And you just don't have that with anything else.
Okay. So Bitcoin hasn't I keep getting messages from people. No, I've asked you this before. They're like, it's deep state, it's cabal, it's already been taken over by MasterCard and Epstein is involved in it, and all of these stories. And I like a conspiracy theory as much as the next person, to a point. And it's these belief systems that are out there, and I'd have to say for you is your, we've chatted 6 times, and belief systems are what creates our identity to a point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What would it take for you to change your belief system on Bitcoin onto other things? Have you questioned it over the years and been skeptical at any time?
I mean, Bitcoin is the most skeptical assholes there is. Like, we're skeptical of everything. So the beauty of Bitcoin is you don't need to believe what somebody says. You just read the code, you run a node, you run a miner, and like physics tells you. It's not somebody telling you a promise. And this is where all the conspiracy theorists fail. Like what a conspiracy theorist will tell you, who's like, oh yeah, Bilderberg run it or whatever. It's like, they'll tell you an opinion, but it's like, can you prove that? No, but someone said it's like, okay, well, I can download the Bitcoin software, I can spin up a node on my computer, and I have total financial sovereignty, and I can validate how much Bitcoin there is on the network. I can send it to anyone, anywhere, at any time. I tend to trust mathematics and physics far more than some idiot's opinion.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.